Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Planning for the All-Star by Leah Busboom. Narrated by Renee Chambliss and Alexander Sendis. But the truth is, love is as much fate as it is planning, as much a beauty as it is a disaster. Kira Cass, The Crown. 1. Maybe I don't really know him. Ari. I bite my lip and grip the steering wheel as I navigate morning traffic. Ari, you can do this, I mutter, trying to boost my flagging confidence. I'm driving to an appointment with my high school crush. The guy never gave me the time of day, but despite his self-inflated ego and arrogance, I fell for him. I know, that makes me sound like an idiot, but who has good judgment when they're only 16? Now, 8 years later, I have the wisdom and life experience to deal with Sebastian Griffin in a mature and professional manner. Fingers crossed. We're meeting at the venue where he wants to hold a 50th anniversary party for his grandparents, the people who stepped up to the plate and raised him and his sister when no one else would. The two most important people in his life, aside from his beloved little sister. Everyone in our high school knew Griff's backstory, and the media latched onto it and hyped it when he turned pro. A heartwarming, boy makes it to the big show defying the odds kind of story. Despite misgivings because of our, well, my, past, I agreed to take him on as a new client. When I quoted an exorbitant rate for my event planning services, he didn't even flinch. He said it sounded reasonable and signed the contract with a flourish of his golden gloved hand. Or at least, that's how I imagine it went down. All of our communication so far has been digital. Besides the beaucoup bucks I'll be making, there's at least one other benefit to this contract that makes me overlook the high school humiliation. The venue is spectacular, and my fingers itch to plan a party here. It's actually kind of been a dream of mine ever since I started this party planning business 3 years ago. The turn-of-the-century Victorian mansion has been lovingly restored into a magnificent estate. The interior was splendid, with ornate mahogany trim and accents, gleaming granite floors, and two massive chandeliers made of Swarovski crystal. Although it sounds over the top, the design is both tasteful and breathtaking. From my online research, it's the perfect location for flaunting your money, which my client has plenty of, and attracting A-listers to your party. My first in-person view of Voorhees Mansion is impressive, as the stately brick facade peeks over the towering oaks, the winding drive building the anticipation. When I finally pull up, two vehicles are already parked in the turning circle under the porte cochere entry. I park beside a behemoth Land Rover and a sleek Mercedes-Benz, my little sedan looking rather plebeian alongside the expensive cars. If I had to guess, the Land Rover belongs to the baseball star, and the Mercedes to that perky mansion supervisor I spoke to over the phone. Getting out of the car, I grab my laptop, straighten my shoulders, and approach the entrance, feeling a lot like Maria von Trapp on her way to meet the captain. It takes all my strength to pull one of the massive wooden doors open, barely inching it wide enough for my small frame to slip through. I stumble inelegantly into the foyer, managing to keep my feet under me, and coming face to face with my former crush, who grins at my whirlwind entrance. My heart flips in my chest as I hug my laptop to it like a shield. Sebastian Griffin is no longer the boy I knew in high school. He's every inch a man, and a very handsome one at that. Ignoring the mansion's heavy wood accents and shiny granite floors, my eyes drink in the baseball all-star, from his thick brown hair and massive biceps to the toes of his well over 6 foot frame. He leaves me a little bit breathless. Or maybe it was tussling with the door that did that? Neither of us blink as we stare at each other for what feels longer than a polite, nice to meet you inspection. He breaks the uneasy silence, stretching between us by stepping forward and extending his hand.
Sebastian Griffin, but please call me Griff.
Huh? My jaw almost drops at his introduction. Either he doesn't remember me, or he doesn't want to acknowledge our teenage history. Following his cue, I shake his large hand, which engulfs mine while his tall frame towers over me.
You batted 359 last season, the highest in the National League.
My cheeks heat at my blurted inner thoughts. Why couldn't I have replied with a socially acceptable, call me Ari? Griff chuckles.
Are you a big fan? He teases. How many home runs did I hit?
49, I reply before my brain wrestles my mouth into silence. His RBI and OPS stats hover on the end of my tongue, but I bite my lip, holding them in and wishing that the floor would swallow me up, or that at least I could have a do-over. Deciding to take control of the conversation, albeit a bit ineptly, I add,
Shall we discuss the party you want to plan rather than swap stats?
His expression shifts to one of cool detachment, and I mentally kick myself for that rather blunt, impolite response. He turns.
Sure, follow me. Miss Lavensher is in the ballroom, where we can discuss arrangements.
He kindly doesn't call me out on the fact that I was the one spouting out his baseball statistics, not him.
I have to practically run to keep up with his long strides, my progress greatly hampered by my business suit skirt, and I trail after him like a well-trained puppy.
When he effortlessly ascends the massive staircase, I huff and puff, trying to keep up. This guy is in top-notch shape, while apparently I'm as out of shape as the Pillsbury Doughboy.
Add exercise to my to-do list. Thankfully, the ballroom is only steps from the top of the stairs, and I'm able to catch up with Griff when he halts just inside the door. I skid to a stop before plowing into his muscular back. Gasp. The room is even more elegant and gorgeous than depicted in the online photos. One of the enormous Swarovski crystal chandeliers is the focal point of the space, twinkling with all the colors of a prism. The mnemonic Roy G. Biv snaps into my overactive brain. As a dramatic fixture catches the natural light flowing through the floor-to-ceiling windows, my mind instantly conjures up circular tables with pristine white tablecloths and gold centerpieces tastefully scattered around the room, a buffet and beverage bar flanking the front, and a dance floor at the back. Heels clack loudly on the polished floor, interrupting my vision.
You must be Ariel.
A stunning middle-aged woman dressed to the nines in a business suit, probably worth more than my car, extends her hand.
I'm Monica Lavensher.
I was expecting someone a bit younger from our telephone exchange earlier, but I carefully school my expression so as not to reveal my surprise. Belatedly, I remember not even offering my name to Griff during our bungling introduction earlier. I feel like my clumsy teenager self again, rather than the refined event-planning professional I'm supposed to be. Gathering my wits, I reply,
Please, call me Ari. It's nice to meet you, Monica.
At least Griff is the only one who turns me into a bumbling idiot. She titters, sounding just like our phone conversation.
I was just discussing this amazing room with Griff and all the possibilities for his event.
Her eyes flutter, and she flashes Griff a flirty smile. He always had this effect on all the girls in high school, so why am I shocked at Monica's overt flirting? Maybe it's their 10-year or more age difference that has me off kilter. Griff nods pleasantly, but doesn't verbalize his thoughts. Instead, I step into the fray. Whipping open my laptop, I switch into Uber party planner mode. Turning to Mr. Baseball, I say,
Mr. Griffin, after seeing the space, do you want to move forward with this location?
He frowns slightly, probably at my formality after his call me Griff comment from earlier, then says,
Yes, this will do nicely, Miss Warner. My grandmother loves turn-of-the-century restored homes, and this one is spectacular.
I acknowledge his compliment of the venue with a nod.
That it is. Rotating back to Monica, I ask, How many square feet is this room? Do you supply tables or do we have to rent them?
We spend the better part of an hour discussing all the pertinent details, from the food to the decorations to the entertainment, and all the vast options for each. I'll make sure that my brother Ash has an opportunity to bid on this catering gig. His food is so sensational that I never feel it's a conflict of interest to suggest him to my clients. Monica is a wealth of knowledge, and she provides several insightful suggestions. Despite her flirting with my client, I'm grateful she's here. My fingers fly over my keyboard as I take notes and jot down Griff's preferences. He's surprisingly engaged and vocal about the particulars, despite being a guy. In my experience, men usually nod and defer to the female in the group. But he knows what he wants, and his budget can apparently afford anything and everything. I was dreading this meeting with him, but he's quite pleasant. As usual, I jumped to conclusions, assuming that the jock I knew in high school would still be the same guy. Arrogant, big ego, too handsome for his shirt. Well, the outrageously good-looking part is still true. Why were my high school memories of Griff skewed? Was it because he avoided me? Or was it me who avoided him? I shake my head to clear the cotton in my brain, focusing back on the party details. Once we're out of Monica's earshot, I'm going to talk him out of renting the peacocks to artfully stroll, Monica's words, around the lawn. She sold him on that crazy and expensive idea, probably counting on the fact that he has more money than sense. I'm going to be the voice of reason, citing the fact that the beautiful birds are not the friendliest animals. If they feel threatened at all, they can become aggressive. We don't want Grandma attacked by an enraged peacock. After an hour or so, my big girl shoes are killing my feet, and I've had enough of this uncomfortable pencil skirt. If I had a pair of scissors, I'd be seriously tempted to run, or waddle, to the ladies' room and widen the constricting slit. Showing too much leg, modesty is overrated, would be preferable to walking like a duck. A blister is forming on my right heel, and my toes feel like sardines. It's becoming more and more difficult to hide my blister-induced limp as we stroll around the venue, discussing various details. Between that and the fact that the skirt allows for a very limited leg movement, I must look like a stiff-legged, waddling Barbie doll. Limp. Plaster smile on face. Tiptoe. Nope, still hurts. Adjust skirt above knee. Still too tight to take a normal step. Sigh. What started out as a professional outfit has deteriorated into a torture device. I had to do anything for my comfy leggings and fluffy yellow ducky slippers. Do I have a Band-Aid in my bag? Glancing out of the corner of my eye, I try to detect if Griff has noticed my ever-increasing discomfort. Thankfully, Monica has engaged him in a heated discussion regarding table linens. I pull back out of my misery and tune into the conversation.
I'd love to show you our selection of tablecloths. They're down in the basement if you don't mind a bit of a hike.
My blister screams at this suggestion. Griff's eyes lock with mine across Monica's shoulders, giving off a save me vibe. For once, our stars align. The guy has been a trooper and doesn't deserve to be subjected to selecting organza versus damask or linen versus satin. I quickly leap into the conversation.
Mr. Griffin, unfortunately, we don't have time for that right now. We're meeting at the bakery to discuss cake options in...
I make a show of looking at the time on my cell.
Goodness, we've only got 15 minutes to hustle over there.
A relieved smile crosses Griff's all-too-handsome face.
We'd best get going then, Miss Warner. Please excuse us, Miss Lavensher, Griff says, as he gently takes my arm and literally propels me from the room.
I'll be in touch,
I shout over my shoulder in a breathless voice as we leave the lovely Monica behind.
Phew, when Griff makes up his mind to act, he's a force of nature.
My feet barely touch the floor as we speed down the stairs and across the foyer. My blister forgotten as I'm drawn into Griff's masculine charms. All my senses are on high alert. The solid muscle behind my back makes my heart pump faster.
He smells like sandalwood and the great outdoors. His rumbly voice croons in my ear, making tingles and goosebumps run up my neck. Although, the tingles quickly subside when I realize he's saying something about how boring the meeting was. Griff yanks open the heavy doors as if they're the weight of one of those flimsy aluminum screen doors. I almost expect them to come off their hinges with the force he's subjecting them to. How I managed to keep up with him, between my blister and confining skirt, is a mystery. Did he half carry me? Once we're outside in the fresh air, Griff pauses and blows out a loud breath. My feet touch down on terra firma, and my shoulders promptly miss his strong presence surrounding me.
Thank you for the save.
I giggle. You're welcome. Monica's tour was a bit much. His eyes scan my face, as if this is the first time he's really looked at me. Despite our initial once-over in the entry, he takes his time with this perusal, my knees weakening by the second. Time skids into slow motion. His brows knit together, and he rubs the back of his neck. But he doesn't say anything, indicating that he recognizes me.
Monica gave me a headache after the first 10 minutes, he says, shifting back and forth.
Maybe he has to use the restroom. I would certainly like to rid my bladder of that third cup of coffee I drank earlier. Deciding to wrap up this conversation pronto, I say,
You hid the headache well. Don't worry, just leave all the rest of the details to me. I'll email you the notes I took.
I reach over and squeeze his rock-solid arm in a show of support. That's a mistake, because a zing of attraction leaps between us, and my hand jerks away as if it's been singed.
Wow.
Thank you, Miss Warner. I need to run.
His baritone voice sounds rushed, the words running together, but it still causes another round of tingles to run up my neck.
If you need any decisions made, just let me know,
he says, edging his way towards his vehicle. I nod, not trusting my voice after the breathless run down the stairs. Or maybe it's Griff that took my breath away.
By the way, you forgot the 2 home runs I hit in the postseason.
He throws over his shoulder, bestowing another one of his heart-melting smiles on me, as he strides off as if his feet can't carry him fast enough. What just happened? Putting my hand to my mouth, I take a whiff of my breath. Phew, halitosis isn't the cause of his rapid departure. I was a little worried that onion bagel I ate for lunch had come back to haunt me. Shrugging off his jittery behavior and chalking it up to bladder control, I add 2 home runs to his tally, storing that away in my mental database, then chuckle when he hops into the Mercedes, not the Land Rover, and drives away. So much for stereotypes, or me jumping to conclusions. With a bemused expression on my face, I cruise back down the winding drive. Did Griff recognize me or not? The conundrum as to why he didn't acknowledge our past consumes my drive home, shoving out everything else. Could he really have forgotten his partner in The Fire? Maybe I didn't really know him in high school, since I was always trying to avoid him. I have an it-was-me-not-him moment, realizing how immature I was around my crush back then. I revise my high school opinion of him and vow to give him a chance. Actually, he's kind of sweet, in a surprising jock-meets-gentleman kind of way. I'm looking forward to our next encounter.
2. I thought I knew her. Griff. I cringe as I drive away. The instant I recognized Ari Warner as Ariel from high school, I started acting like a bumbling teenager again and couldn't get out of there fast enough. I smacked the steering wheel in frustration, narrowly avoiding a bougainvillea bush. My party planner is a conundrum. As the mansion tour dragged on, it became obvious that her outfit was uncomfortable, the skirt too restrictive to keep up with my long strides, and the shoes causing her to limp. Her ineffective attempts to hide her discomfort made me chuckle. I wanted to pick her up and carry her the rest of the way, but that would have been overstepping. My slow-to-start brain was trying to figure out why she looked familiar all afternoon, but I didn't realize who she was until the very end and the puzzle pieces finally fell into place. She's grown up since high school, becoming a woman with curves in all the right places. Despite her petite stature, she's quite stunning, but still quirky. When she spouted out my baseball stats, I knew she seemed familiar. Most women don't start there when they meet me for the first time. They usually bat their eyelashes at me and comment on my strong forearms or well-developed pecs rather than my batting average. Her quirky facial features started my brain in the right direction to figuring out who she is. I remember all those same expressions as I sat beside her in chemistry class my senior year in high school. She was the lone sophomore in the class, not surprising since she's such a brainiac. The way her brow creased when Miss Lavensher described the typical table layout in the ballroom was the same expression she had when Mr. Westwood botched that chemistry experiment and it boiled over like an erupting volcano. That must be her "I don't think this is going well" expression. When Monica suggested, and I promptly agreed to, renting peacocks to stroll artfully on the lawn, the way Ari wrinkled her pert nose was the same expression she adopted when debating Mr. Westwood about his statement that there are five senses. Apparently there are more, and Ari put up some good arguments, after which Mr. Westwood refused to call on her anymore for the duration of the class period. I'll label that her "I don't agree with you" expression. Oh, and I readily agreed to Monica's suggestion about the peacocks just to pull Ari's chain, even though I have no intention of following through with that lame-brained scheme, but it's gonna be fun debating with the petite party planner about it. Why didn't I realize who she was before hiring her? Because she's become one of the best event planners in the area, and I wanted nothing but the best to plan Grams and Gramps' party. I clicked on a form, filled it out, and voila! The best party planner in the business was at my service. When I finally took my time to look her over at the end of the mansion tour, everything clicked into place. The renowned party planner is none other than my high school chemistry partner. How come I didn't come clean when I recognized her? The crush I had on Ariel in high school came roaring back, and I became tongue-tied. She was the class valedictorian, too brainy to even give me a second glance. She makes me feel like a clumsy teenager again rather than the suave, refined, professional athlete I strive to be. Now I've created an even more awkward situation between us. I feel intimidated by her presence, just like in high school. I can't pretend to not recognize her forever. What am I gonna do? Way to go, Griff. My phone jingles in my hand and I grin. The little planner is so predictable. Ari.
Just emailed you my notes from the tour. We need to discuss certain decisions. Please read and get back to me.
Me. Will do. The peacocks are non-negotiable. Laughing, I set down the phone. There, that'll keep her stewing for a while. Why do I like to pull her chain so much? She brings out the contrarian in me, I guess. Reading Ari's email will have to wait. I've got to run to one of the seemingly endless number of off-season team meetings. Meet the new guys, meet the new coaches, discuss new strategies. Even though I get paid an inordinate amount of money, sometimes this gig gets old. Griff, wait up, Brent says as I'm booking it away from the sleep-inducing team meeting. My best buddy since high school, Brent Masterson, works in the front office. His dad owns the team, so I tease him about being a big shot in the organization, but the reality is that Brent is his dad's glorified gopher. He's certainly a fast one. How was the team meeting? He says, puffing only slightly when he catches up to me. Don't ask. I'm on my way to grab some caffeine and dinner. Want to come with me? I desperately need both after the Boersville last few hours. With baseball making the shift illegal, all the coaches wanted to strategize about today was how to move infielders around within the context of the new rules. Sure, lead the way as long as it's burgers. I laugh. Brent is also so predictable. 10 minutes later, we're settled into a booth at his favorite burger place, Wally's Burgers. It isn't fancy, but they grill up some fine beef. Some of the combinations are a little bizarre, so I stick to the plain and simple Maui burger. The only strange ingredient there is grilled pineapple, which is unexpectedly delicious. So, how did the mansion tour go with your new event planner? Brent is my closest confidant, so I told him about the 50th anniversary party for my grandparents. I want to go all out for the people who sacrificed everything to raise Libby and me after our parents were killed in a car accident. You'll never guess who the planner turned out to be, I say with a wry grin. Brent chuckles. Your girlfriend from 2 years ago? Nope. Though that would have been just as unfortunate because I wouldn't have remembered her either. Your third grade teacher? I laugh. Nope. A vision of Mrs. Stevenson's fat ankles comes to mind. You couldn't tell where her ankles ended and her leg began. I give up, who? Leaning closer as if I'm imparting a confidential state secret, I say, Ariel Warner. Brent chokes on his ice water, spewing water droplets across the table. Miss Smarty Pants from high school? I nod. As he grabs a napkin and wipes up his mess, he adds, You had the biggest crush on her. Did you know it was her when you hired this party planning firm? Shaking my head, I say, Her company, Too Busy to Plan, comes highly recommended. I never even thought to ask for her full name before we met. She goes by Ari now. Rookie mistake, Brent says with a smirk. We're interrupted when the waitress drops off our orders. My eyes widen at the size of these burgers. I'd forgotten that they're served on a platter rather than a plate. Brent digs in, ingredients and Wally's special sauce spilling out when he takes a bite. Licking the sauce from his hand, he says, Oh, this is delicious. Why did it take us so long to come back here? I calmly hand him a stack of napkins before digging into the Maui, the taste of grilled pineapple combining perfectly with the grilled beef. We're going to come back sooner next time, that's for sure. Several minutes are spent devouring our burgers, keeping conversation to a minimum. Just when I think Brent has forgotten about the encounter with Ariel, he says, Do you think it's wise to work with her? I remember what a mess you were in high school, mooning over her, but too intimidated to do anything about it. I exhale loudly. I pretended not to recognize her. When Brent's eyes widen, I hold up a placating hand. In my defense, I didn't really recognize her until the end. But I know. Jerk move. More like scaredy cat move, he adds with a snort. Brent has a way with words. I chew on the last of my burger, pondering Brent's comment. I should have acknowledged that I knew Ari the minute I recognized her, but I didn't really want to admit the embarrassing fact that it took me so long to connect the beautiful woman in front of me with the crush from my teenage years. Are you sure you want to relive high school? Remember how she hid when you tried to ask her to prom? I grimace, remembering how she ducked inside her locker when she saw me coming. She was such a shrimp and easily fit inside. Was she just that shy? Or was she avoiding me? You mooned over her the entire chemistry class. When you two had to do that lab experiment together, she almost set the room on fire. Or was it you who did that because you were so distracted by her? Brent asks gleefully, suppressing laughter. That wasn't my finest moment. I ignored both Mr. Westwood's and Ari's directions, using too much ethyl alcohol in the experiment known as the Rainbow Flame. You've got to admit the colors were really spectacular when I added the salt. Brent laughs full out. Right! The flame jumped across the entire lab table. When Ariel grabbed the fire extinguisher and put out the fire, you were fuming! He gets a chuckle out of his own pun while I scowl. She sprayed the fire retardant everywhere, I huff. Including on me, although Ariel's quick action probably saved the classroom from burning down. Brent reaches across the table and smacks my arm. You gotta admit it was hilarious. Maybe she should have been the baseball star the way she doused you, Mr. Westwood, and the fire, all in one go. At the time, I didn't see the humor in the situation. Seeing the teacher covered in white foam did make him look a lot like the Michelin Man. In retrospect, that sight was actually a high point of the disaster. Plus, because of that incident, the Rainbow Flame experiment was banned at our high school. My chest puffs. Yep, I did that. Why didn't you ever ask her out? Brent asks quietly, not willing to give up on this topic just yet. I shrug, not wanting to dwell on my awkward teenage years. She's the only girl who didn't hit on me. It was refreshing. But when she spurned all my advances, I gave up. She just truly wasn't interested. I sigh. If I'm honest... It wasn't just that. I was intimidated by her. She's far too smart for me. Brent shakes his head. That's not true, Griff. You're the only major leaguer I know with a computer science degree. My nerdy side is proud of my degree. When my playing days are over, it'll come in handy. But despite my college diploma, I still feel inferior next to Ariel. Brent punches my arm. Anyway, you gave up awfully quickly. I've never seen you not go full throttle towards something you want. You wouldn't be in the major leagues without your drive and perseverance. Surely a shrimp like Ariel is not that intimidating. If only he knew. She overwhelmed me from the first day I sat beside her in her chemistry class. Her understated beauty, her quirky comments, her intelligence. She turned me into a bumbling idiot every time I was near her. After my trip down memory lane with Brent, it hits me. Why didn't Ariel acknowledge our history during the meeting at the mansion? Even if she...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?